Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hit my music!
Break it down!
Oh, you didn't know?
Stand back!
I'm a nice man!
Mamacita. Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Eat me.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 150, and it's about the themes of Barry Horowitz. And today I am joined by a returning guest here on the show. He's a contributor at Voices of Wrestling. It's John Hernandez. Hello, John.
Hey, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be back on an episode where I hopefully have a much more positive outlook than last time I was on. And I think I will, because we're talking about a subject near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, last time you were on was about 2 years ago. It was the 2020 year-end episode, which, looking back, those were some bleak days, I think, yeah, given everything that happened back then. In fact, I believe we recorded that the day after Brody Lee died. So, yeah, I'm glad we could do this under much brighter circumstances, John.
Oh, yeah. That was the day. It might have been... I guess the night before the news had gotten out about Brody Lee, a dark cloud was hanging over that episode, and it wasn't helped by that Anderson and Gallows theme we had to talk about.
Listen, when the devil's in your six, you got to talk about it, okay? You have to. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's a rough one.
Yeah, but this is actually a pretty big episode to be on, because it's not just episode 150, which is a nice milestone there, but... this is actually the first episode of the show that I'm doing as a 30-year-old man. It was my birthday a little over a week ago, and I'm now 30 years old. So, it's all downhill from here, John, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny, because there was actually a point on that episode I was on last time where I said, Andrew, I think we are around the same age. And just because you're an encyclopedia, who's so quick on... people call you the robot because of what a resource you are with wrestling knowledge. I always kind of assumed you were around my age, and I found out after that that you were still in your 20s. I'm 35. I'm not ancient or anything, but now that you're 30, you're right. It is all downhill. Everything sucks from here on out. We pretty much are the same age now. Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I woke up on my birthday and my back was aching, my knees were shot, my hair had fallen out. It's all over for your pal Andrew there, but no, in all seriousness, I feel the same. Nothing has changed, really. Only thing that's changed, I think, is I no longer have the comfort blanket of saying, hey, I'm not old, I'm only in my 20s. That's out the window now, baby. Can't use that one anymore, but look, it happens to all of us, John. It's a fact of life. We can't help it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, I had a different version of that. I used to have all these goals for my life that I'd be like, yeah, I'll just get them done before I'm 30. Like I would quit smoking before I was 30. I would have my master's degree by the time I was 30. Well, when I turned 30, none of that shit had happened. Hopefully you're doing better than I was when I turned 30. I have quit smoking. And I'm about to finish a bachelor's degree. So, I guess the big thing about turning 30 is just do it better than I did.
I'll do my best. I don't smoke already, so I have that going for me at least. So there you go.
You got the head start on me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, we are here today to talk about the themes of one Barry Horowitz. And you might be out there thinking, Barry Horowitz? Why are you doing an episode about him? Well, it's December. It's the holiday season, which means that Hanukkah is right around the corner. I believe this year it starts on the 18th. I'm Jewish. John, you're Jewish as well. I thought, hey, why not do a Hanukkah special, break out the menorah, spin the dreidel, eat some gelt, the whole nine yards, and celebrate one of the most iconic Jewish pro wrestlers of all time. And not to get too serious here, but I think it's especially important to do an episode like this nowadays, given where we are with anti-Semitism and its prevalence in society today. I mean, it's still very much a problem. We just had Kanye West go on Alex Jones and talk about how much he loves Hitler and the Nazis, for God's sake. So, yeah, and when I hear stuff like that, you know, it does get my dander up. I'm not a very observant Jew. I don't keep kosher. I haven't been to temple in years, but it's still my heritage. It's still my DNA, and I do have years and years of Hebrew school and learning about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, you know, drilled into my brain at this point. So I do feel the need to balance the scales somewhat and, you know, bring some positivity to the proceedings. That's the way I see it anyway, John.
You know, I'm glad you brought that all up, because for what it's worth, being a fan of pro wrestling, I feel like pro wrestling has often punished me as a Jew. We'll talk about that in this episode. You know, I think with Judaism specifically, more than most religions, I think there's a cultural aspect of it that's much more prevalent than in a lot of people than observing. And I'm also not a very observant Jew, but I also was bar mitzvahed. And if I recall correctly, there were TV set up where people could play SmackDown 2 for the PlayStation in my bar mitzvah. So I'm a real one in every way. But like you said, I think in this current day and age where somehow anti-Semitism has gotten a voice again, I think we could use some wins, and we could use some recognition of some of Judaism's biggest winners. And it's unfortunate that we won't be doing that today.
Yes, yes. We'll get to that aspect of him for sure. But before this episode, I was looking at a list of Jewish wrestlers, and there aren't that many of them, just like there aren't that many Jews in the world just in general. We are a minority after all, but looking at the names here, you have people like Goldberg, Raven, Colt Cabana, you know, Paul Heyman, Missy Hyatt, Matt Sydal, A-Train, The Grand Wizard, The Malenkos, Billy Kidman, Drew Gulak, MJF, of course. I believe Randy Savage and Lanny Poffo are half-Jewish on their mother's side. And there's a few more after that, too. But Barry Horowitz in particular, I think, is a guy who isn't just a wrestler who is Jewish. He is a Jewish wrestler. He came out to Hava Nagila. He wore the Star of David on his trunks. He used his own name, Horowitz, which is a very Jewish name, for most of his career. You know, he made being Jewish like part of his wrestling persona. Not for all of his career, and not to a super over-the-top extent, which we'll get to, but when I think of Barry Horowitz, I don't just think of a guy who patted himself on the back a lot of times. I think of him being like, you know, a very notable Jewish wrestler as well, John.
Yeah, and I think you bringing up his name is also an interesting point, because there are very few Jewish wrestlers who had, you know, there aren't any Cohens out there winning championships. And the other one, funny enough, is Goldberg. I always thought it was cool that Goldberg's name was Goldberg, and he never got pegged with a different name. And now, you know, so the balance, the spectrum of Jewy last names in wrestling has been Horowitz to Goldberg, someone who never lost and someone who exclusively lost. And thankfully now we have MJF, a freedman out there, tipping the scales back in favor for us.
Yeah, kicking the door open for, you know, world champion Chaim Lipschitz, you know, just Moshe Teitelbaum. The future is ours, John. The future is ours, all right?
Oh, I can see it now.
Yeah, yeah, but But yeah, the other notable aspect about Barry's, you know, career and all that, and you mentioned this, of course, is that he is arguably the most famous wrestling loser of all time. I know he's on record for not liking the term jobber. He prefers enhancement guy, but regardless, he lost a lot of matches over the years. According to Cage Match, they have 1,524 matches of his on record. He lost 81% of those matches. That's a lot of losses. And based on how many matches he has, he made a career out of it. He made a career out of being the loser and being the guy who put other guys over. And you can do that in wrestling. You know, if you look at it as like filling a role and you're good at it and you're happy with being in that role, you can do it for a very long time. I mean, right now, one of my favorite lower card guys in AEW is Serpentico, who just became the first guy there to have 100 losses because he's really great at putting people over. And there have been plenty of guys like that in wrestling over the years, but, you know, I think Barry Horowitz is looked at as like the ultimate icon of wrestling losers, John.
Well, I think that there's a lot to be said about famous losers in history in pro wrestling. And I think this might only extend to wrestling nerds like us, but we remember those people who stick around and take those pins. And people like Barry Horowitz and the Brooklyn Brawler. I mean, think of it like this. I mean, it's a fake sport. Those wins, someone told you to go out there and win and lose. Barry Horowitz was in prominent positions wrestling for major companies for over two decades, right? Something like that. Maybe a decade and a half, he's in pretty prominent positions. That's a great career. People who had much more kayfabe success than Barry Horowitz did not have the longevity of Barry Horowitz.
I agree. I mean, to me, it's no different than like a character actor who maybe gets typecast as like a cop or a mob guy, but still gets steady work for years and years and years because they're good at the role and someone has to do it, so why not them? And in Barry's case, he wasn't just good at it. It eventually got him this like big moment where he beats Skip, Chris Candido on TV out of nowhere, and the announcers are all shocked. Horowitz beat him! Horowitz beat him! And then he beat him again on pay-per-view at SummerSlam and a few weeks later in a 10-minute match. And from then on, he became like, you know, an actual character on the show, which for someone like him, who for so long was just the bottom of the totem pole, that is amazing. And I don't think it is anywhere near the impact or staying power in people's minds if Barry was just like some standard mid-carder with like a 50-50 record. He had to be in that, you know, perpetual enhancement role for it to work, I think, John.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, there's a lot of guys in the mid-card of WCW and WWF in the years he worked for them that we'll never think of again. And I think Barry Horowitz, to some extent, would be in our memories, even if that big win over Skip didn't come. And the thing, too, that I learned getting ready for this is Barry Horowitz has had long losing streak angles in multiple companies over his career. And the WWF one wasn't the first time that happened. The guy really knew how to monetize losing. And the other thing about Barry too, is people liked working with him. And in the rare occasion you can find a match where he gets some time, Horowitz, like until like, you know, pretty much until like the end of the WCW run, he can go. Like, yeah. I just watched him get squashed by Ric Flair on like a TV match, a studio match, and he's kicking ass out there.
Yeah, I mean, losing or not, it's still important to remember that this guy was, you know, a good, solid wrestler in the ring, no doubt about it. And yeah, as we go along here, we'll see that Barry's career is more than just Hava Nagila. You know, he was in various NWA territories in the 80s. He was in and out of WWF many times. He did All Japan tours. He was in WCW. I mean, this year, he came back to wrestling after like a decade, and he wrestled Joey Janela. And he was also on the WrestleCon Super Show this year. And he was on Dynamite when MJF did that fake Dark Side of the Ring video in the Wardlow feud. He made a cameo as legendary Jewish wrestler Barry Horowitz. So Yeah, he's still popping up after all these years, John. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, look, it speaks to what a memorable guy he is. I mean, for me, that memory comes from the fact that he walked out to Hava Nagila and got his ass kicked every night. But, I mean, it's there. Everyone who follows this stuff knows who this guy is. And, you know, he's my avatar in the Voices of Wrestling Discord for a reason. He's an icon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Plus, Action Bronson once wrote a song called Barry Horowitz, which samples his ring introduction, and there's the line, it's Barry Horowitz rap, I pat myself on the back, don't fake the funk on a nasty dunk, Shaq I attack. So the man's a crossover cultural star to boot, John. How about that?
I didn't know that. That's so cool. I wonder what it's like for Horowitz now. Like, I wonder how he looks back on the recognition he's gotten. There's no figure like Barry Horowitz in history. And I wonder how much that name, like, extends beyond the nerdiest of wrestling fans. I have no real scope on it because I'm the nerdiest of wrestling fans. But, you know, that's cool. I mean, that's a lasting legacy. Lots of guys from his era I'll never think of again. No one's rapping about him. I don't receive cameos as gifts for my engagement from not getting them from Freddie Joe Floyd, you know, or TL Hopper, getting them from Barry Horowitz.
Well, I think Freddie Joe would be hard to get nowadays considering he's dead, you know, that's Tracy Smothers. But regardless.
You know what's funny? The first person I was going to say was Chris Candido. And then I paused.
Yeah, he's also gone. Dead, right,
so I
right.
just named a different dead guy. Ugh.
It's okay. You can atone at Yom Kippur. How about that? So let's get to these themes here. We have seven to get to. And Barry made his wrestling debut in 79, trained by Boris Malenko. And it's funny, he didn't always go by Barry Horowitz at first. He had a few different names early on. In early 80s WWF, he was Barry Hart, H-A-R-T. Then he went to Mid-Atlantic and was Barry Hart there too. He was also Bret Hart, B-R-E-T-T-H-A-R-T. I wonder why that didn't stick. And then he went to Championship Wrestling from Florida in the mid-80s, where he got the name Jack Hart. And that would be his name until he went back to the WWF in the late 80s and became Barry Horowitz there full-time. So, again, much like an actor changing their name to hide their Jewishness, so too did Barry, it seems, John.
Yeah, and it's a shame. But, no, I don't know. I think... I also wonder, so when does the switch to being Barry Horowitz happen? Is it in the WWF run? Did Vince always know?
Yes.
Oh man, that's crazy. Did Vince always know he was going to do this? Did Vince know from day one he was going to march this guy out with the Star of David on the screen and just stomp his ass to pieces for years?
I mean, it's Vince, so we can never give him the benefit of the doubt, but you know, it's too perfect. It's too perfect.
Too perfect.
It works too well, but yeah. But anyway, we'll start off here with the themes in CWF in Florida when he was Jack Hart. This is where he gets this song. It's by Van Halen off the album 1984. This is Jump. We've played this song before on the show. It's been used by a ton of people in wrestling. Eddie Guerrero, the Von Erichs, Volador Jr., Greg Gagne, and, well, Barry Horowitz. Quite the crew there. And what I like about Jump is that it's not just a great song, of course, but it's important to let people know that, again, we won't just be talking about Havana Gila. You know, even though that is his most well-known song, we're going to go to some different genres and bands on this episode. And a good way to dip our toes into that mindset is 80s Van Halen, John.
Yeah. There's a lot of meat on the bone here. I mean, so the Jack Hart run is super interesting to me for a lot of reasons. One is that I didn't know this until more recently, but he had a long losing streak angle happen that ended with him picking up the vacant Florida championship, the NWA, like the CW, whatever the NWA belt that the CWF used. And he wins that in 85. And in 85, that's no dumpy territory. The next year, a match with Barry Windham and Flair there wins the Observer Match of the Year. Well, Luger's getting started there. So it's hard to envision, but Barry Horowitz, you know, coming out to Jump to a cool song, winning a match or two, it was happening. Totally different guy. Granted, once he got past losing a kayfabed number of 120 straight matches. But it's cool. And, you know, maybe this was a hint of what was to come, because David Lee is a famous Jew.
That's right.
A famously outspoken Jew. And David Lee Roth used to say that part of his overblown Van Halen persona came from wanting to shake stereotypes around Jews at the time. And maybe Horowitz had that same intention and just decided to completely shake that intention once he got to Vince.
I mean, looking at the other songs here, the only one that emphasizes him being Jewish is Havana Gila,
right,
which he only had for like a 2-year period in the WWF. Everything else is, you know, not going in that Jewish direction. Even though, yeah, David Lee Roth is Jewish, this song is not, oy vey, he jumped. You know, it's not like that at all. So, again, it's a good way to introduce that notion of him, you know, being more than just the Havana Gila guy.
Yeah, and I don't mean it to, though I do have a hard time not making everything I say about Barry Horowitz end in a punchline. I don't mean it to de-emphasize. I think it's important to recognize everything he did that wasn't a caricature of his faith, but it's hard not to look at this stuff through the context of what we all recognize him for and what we would come to associate him with after the WWF gimmick is introduced. But yeah, no, I mean, I think of him, it changes. Like, I think of like Barry Horowitz back then. Imagine hanging out with Barry Horowitz back then, man. Hanging out in Florida, Jack guy, coming out to Jump, wrestling Ric Flair sometimes, Barry Windham. Kind of he's a cool, seems like a cool guy back then.
There's a practical element here too, I think, because, you know, you can't have Jack Hart, NWA Florida Heavyweight Champion, and just have him like be in the ring with no music. Like, he has to have a proper entrance with the proper song. Even though he was just champion for like 40 days or whatever, still, the presentation of a champion matters. So I think there's that element there too with this song, John.
Yeah. And like you said, like, he has to be presented as someone. I mean, granted, it is the beginning of him having a comic relief-y element, because he wins it. He wins a vacant belt after a long losing streak. But, you know, he's still presented as a professional wrestler who to a live audience needs to be perceived as a threat. And look, in the mid-80s, walking out to Jump is pretty fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to skip ahead now to 92. That's when Barry starts doing tours with All Japan Pro Wrestling. Misawa, Kobashi, Kawada, Taue, Horowitz. And Barry had a few themes in All Japan. The first one he only used once, and for a very good reason, which we'll get to. This is by Two Live Crew, off the album Sports Weekend, As Nasty As They Want to Be Part 2. This is Pop That Pussy.
Damn! Shit! Look at the ass on that bitch! Look at the titties!
Can go to see freaky hoes doing shows, doing tricks to make us holler on a given night, all for a dollar. Silicone breasts, oil on their chest, not like us but above the rest. They'll do anything to turn us on. Them hoes got it going on.
I like big booty and big old titties. Bitch, you know you've been fucked by many, so come and be my private dancer. I got some money if that's the answer. I really wanna be with you. I get hard after seeing you. How hard? Hard like a rock when you make that pussy pop.
So this requires an explanation, I think. According to a tweet from our good pal Roy Lucier, Barry used this song for a match against Kenta Kobashi on July 11th, 1992. It was in Akita, Japan, and All Japan management were not happy about it. Now, Roy says in the tweet that Barry used Pop That Coochie, which is the single version where they clean it up a little bit, but everywhere else says Pop That Pussy. And there's no footage, we're out of luck there, but regardless, it's still an objectively funny situation. I mean, God love Barry Horowitz, I just don't think of him as a super horny, raunchy ladies' man, John. Just not really in his wheelhouse, I don't think, in terms of character work.
Well, that's the vision of Barry Horowitz I was trying to set up when I was talking about thinking of him in Florida, just being a Jack Tan guy coming at the jump. He wanted you to know that he can be a horny dude. And this is how we showed it. You know, I think obviously I'm being ridiculous and the timelines don't work out here, but I think of this as what if history changed in the moment he walked out to Pop That Pussy. Like, we know Baba had, I mean, by 92 things were in motion with the Pillars, but we know Baba had this, like, you know, admiration for the Western presentation of wrestling through the 80s. Barry Horowitz comes over. He walks out to Pop That Pussy. Baba goes, well, he's in the WWF. Maybe this is what they're doing over there. And history changes in that moment. Like, maybe when Misawa wins that first title, Give Me That Nut by Eazy-E plays. Rainmaker Shock happens. My neck, my back blares through the speakers. This really could have been... This could have changed the way we look at wrestling forever. But no, I don't understand how this happened. This is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, let's.
But
let's
though,
not...
Andrew, I gotta tell you, I was a little disappointed when you introduced this song, because as a guest and a listener to the podcast, there's no song I was more looking forward to you reading lyrics from than Pop That Pussy. I was rubbing my hands together when you intro this song.
I don't think I have my limits here. Okay, and listen, I've read some very bonkers explicit lyrics on this show, but this is this might be just too gross for me, I think. I don't know. Maybe you know what it
gross
is
reading it silently.
Yeah, I mean, maybe what it is it's because he used it in 90s All Japan against Kobashi. Like, this is the holy ground of pro wrestling, and here's good old Barry coming out to Pop That Pussy. Hey, Pop That Pussy, baby. Like, I'm just picturing Giant Baba sitting backstage, you know, all of a sudden he hears, I like big booty and big old titties. Bitch, you know you've been fucked by many. And the cigar falls out of his mouth and Mrs. Baba is there with the shock look on her face like, oh, Barry, what have you done, buddy? What have you done?
I'm just imagining, like, so, I mean, this wasn't the first song he walked out to in All Japan. So I'm just imagining one day he's wrestling Kenta Kobashi and he goes to the sound guy or something and hands him a copy of, like, Nasty As They Want to Be by 2 Live Crew. And he goes, yeah, track 6 today or whatever album and track it is. But just completely fucking insane. I want the footage so bad. There's so many lost holy grails in wrestling, you know, like. fan cams that you hear exist and you're dying to see, and none of them mean more to me than, I don't even need the match. I need Barry Horowitz walking to the ring to pop that pussy. I'll take that over anything that's out there.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I remember, this is 92. This is still in the heyday of when Two Live Crew were like Public Enemy number one when it came to obscenity. Like, their albums were pulled from stores. People got arrested for selling them. Like, a big reason why they introduced the parental advisory sticker on albums is because of Two Live Crew. So if Barry did indeed pick the song to come out to, he's got some balls. I'll give him that. He's got some big balls there, John.
Well, Barry Horowitz was, you know, he was a freedom fighter for free speech, like much like Elon Musk today. Some of them very important figures fighting for our rights. And I take them both equally seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe his mindset was like, you know, 90s All Japan, they have these real songs being played like Danger Zone and I Love It Loud and Welcome to the Jungle. One of
I
these
follow
days.
You up to this point, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe maybe you saw that and was like, hey, I'll just pick a real song too. But this stands alone. I mean, this version, the Coochie version, whatever it actually was, this song and these lyrics being on the same show as like Spartan X and Grand Sword, it's just, it's too funny. It's way too funny, John.
Yeah, I think I could see him saying, well, they come out to real songs here. Maybe I'll pick one. And that's where my understanding of it ends, because, Andrew, there are so many songs in this world. There are so many good songs in this world. But he specifically chose this one. I don't know. I admire it. Look, we talk about how the Pillars were, how the King's Road style embodies courage and heart. And I don't know if anyone exemplified that more than Barry Horowitz walking out to pop that pussy on Giant Baba's watch.
Yes, yes. Well, by all we know, it was a one-time thing. But Barry kept on in All Japan. Got another theme here. This is by Vinnie Moore, current guitarist for the band UFO. Off the album Meltdown, it's called Cinema. This is a hard pivot away from the previous song here into the realm of instrumental hard rock. And this is a good song. It's a fine song. Good guitar work. Not much to dig into, really, especially in comparison to Two Live Crew. It's nowhere near as exciting as that. But hey, what is, John? Am I right? What is?
Truly, yeah. This song is the bathroom break match of the podcast, having to follow the five-star classic that is Pop That Pussy. I do think this song, when I was younger, I used to call music like this Capcom menu music. It's this, like, it's all, there's a lot of Japanese wrestling themes through history and today that make me feel this way. This just, like, very specific kind of lead guitar music that makes me feel the same way as like White Noise. That sounds mean, maybe, I don't know, it's true. I get the feeling of like the DVD menu loop too many times when I hear music like this, like here's something I'll get some shit for. I feel the same way about Shingo's New Japan music. That's the modern version of that for me. You know, I didn't know it was the guy from UFO. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's been in the band for quite a while now. I think like 20 years or so. My key takeaway from this is that it's the most traditionally badass and serious-sounding song we've had so far. Because Jump is, you know, very 80s party rock kind of thing. Pop That Pussy is extremely horny. But this is just straightforward guitar shredding, which, again, we're not used to that tone with Barry. Not that All Japan are pushing him as like a real badass kind of guy. He did lose a lot of matches there too. But to me, music like this, you can picture him as like just a standard serious athletic guy who's here to wrestle. And he's going to get in there with Misawa and Kobashi and Akira Taue or whomever, and he'll give him the business. And he'll give him his best. So that's what I feel hearing this kind of song for him, John, if that makes sense to you.
No, that makes tons of sense. And, you know, I was going to say, my feeling about something like Jump relative to something like this is, you're right, this is more conventionally I'm going to go kick your ass music. But Jump kind of has a personality to it. And this is like a feeling I was talking about last time I was on. I think when we were talking about like Thunder Rose's music, like some music like evokes generic ass kicker, which I think doesn't always offer as much as a song could as wrestling music, as a wrestling theme, that is. But I mean, how much were you supposed to offer for the guy who just is going to come out and lose in 8 minutes? So yeah, great theme song for Barry and All Japan. But you know what else I think about? Why the hell were they flying Barry out? I mean, I know like American jobbers got flown out to Japan other times, but what's the value of flying Barry Horowitz out?
To
lose all his matches.
I have no idea. Yeah, I mean, look at the cage match, and he's in there teaming with like Al Perez and Sunny Beach, and so many, like, there's so many random guys in 90s All Japan undercards where you look at them and like, wait, he was there too? And yeah, Barry was, he was one of them for multiple tours too. They pulled him out for multiple tours. My best guess is that, you know, he's a good wrestler and they must have liked him. You know, he was in there with all the Pillars and Hanson and Johnny Ace and those guys. So he kept getting brought back. You know, that's my guess anyway. I don't know. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, I'm sure that's probably the case. I just imagine the flight didn't come cheap. But I guess, you know, someone's got to lose to Richard Slinger or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where you fly Barry in for.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, we have one more All Japan theme here. And this one I did find footage of him using on YouTube. It's a fan cam of Barry versus Richard Slinger.
Yeah, I watched. That's why I said that. I watched the same match.
Yeah, good old Dick Slinger there. This is Michael Jackson featuring Heavy D off the album Dangerous. This is Jam. So this is definitely an episode of Hard Pivots. We're pivoting back to the pop world here. Michael Jackson, the king of pop, got the New Jack Swing, the dancey grooves, the funky beats, the live vocals, and we talked about Pop That Pussy being a tad out of place in 90s All Japan for very obvious reasons. Well, this is too, in a way. I think it's a much more family-friendly song than Two Live Crew is, but it's still like the dancey pop stuff. It just it doesn't vibe with the heyday of All Japan Pro Wrestling to me. It, even though it's a good song and a very popular one as well, I think something like, you know, Cinema fit the tone better than this one does, John.
I think you're right, but I think Jam is a weirdly cool wrestling theme. I mean, in part because the main vocals don't start until about a minute 20 in. It's real rhythmic and repetitive in that intro. It's kind of setting a groove. I hear what you're saying, that that specific vibe and groove is out of place in All Japan, but when I saw that he came out to Jam, I was like, thinking about it for a second, and I was like, that's a cool wrestling entrance. I imagine not much thought went into it. I mean, Jam's music video was such a big deal. I imagine he just saw it once and was like, I don't know that many songs, how about this one? But I don't know. It's a cool intro. I mean, like you said, I'm sure it was weird. But, you know, the vocal, I mean, he's probably in the ring 40 seconds before vocal starts. Get some of those Michael Jackson like ad-libs in there. Cool walkout.
Yeah, I agree with that part for sure. It's just, you know, the music is such an odd dichotomy for me with the promotion. But the lyrics, you know, it's a good thing they don't kick in right away, because I think the message of the song doesn't really gel either. Because the song's about, like, escaping the problems of the world through music and dance, and we need to look deep inside of ourselves, and we need to build a better world through cooperation and love, and that's all well and good, but this is pro wrestling, baby. This is All Japan. This is head drops and lariats and chops and violence and fighting spirit. So there's a big clash there, too. And there's a big clash with Barry. He's not like, you know, make a difference Barry Horowitz here. He's just regular old Barry Horowitz coming out to a match. So, yeah, it's a good song, but contextually it's a bit strange, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you there. I don't really get it. But, you know, I watched that clip, that Dick Slinger match. You see him, he does walk out to it in that. And it didn't strike me, and I think part of that is because I didn't watch him go against someone with one of those iconic themes. I think if I watched him go against, like, someone with one of those songs that you instantly remember as iconic of the time, it would have stuck out to me. And I'm sure no Barry Horowitz intro made tape for All Japan, so I'm pretty sure that's the only instance we'll ever get of him walking out to Jam. But, you know, if the next entrance was like Misawa's or Stan Hansen, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know if Jam's doing it, Barry.
I will say this, though, about Barry and his song choices so far. He is on the money in terms of pop culture relevance. You got Jump in the mid-80s. You have these three All Japan songs which all came out around 91, 92. He is on the ball with picking these hot contemporary songs. So, you know, kudos to him in that regard, at least, John.
But you know how that reads to me? It always, with wrestlers, especially of the time, the more you learn about them, and I say this lovingly, I think this makes the best wrestlers. But the more you learn about them, the more I'm like, this guy knows nothing of the world outside of screaming into microphones and getting dropped on his head. And again, I say that with all the love in my heart.
That's why we love
those people. Yeah. That's why we love them, because they're fucking lunatics. So when I see the songs that Horowitz chose, I imagine the reason they're all the most famous songs is because they're the only songs he's ever heard. You know, maybe he bought a CD single of a song he liked once or twice. Jump was huge and on the radio all the time. The Jam music video is like iconic. Two Live Crew was in the news. I bet you he heard that song once and was like, that's funny. So when I hear it, I don't think like fingers on the pulse. I think like he walked past the pulse once or twice and just made decisions based on that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So when he's not doing All Japan tours, Barry is back working for the WWF, and he'll be there throughout the 90s until 97. So off and off for a good long time there, but he doesn't get his first WWF theme until he beats Skip in the summer of 95. They finally gave him a song and Titantron and entrance and everything. This is Jim Johnston with his rendition of Hava Nagila. This is the main event here, the centerpiece of the episode, and I don't know about you, John, but I hear this, and it brings me back to the countless bar and bat mitzvahs I went to as a kid and teenager, where they sang this song and danced around, because to any Gentiles out there, Hava Nagila is the song they play at bar mitzvahs and weddings and whatnot, where people hold hands and dance around in a circle, and then someone gets in a chair, and they lift the chair up and down. Now, the bar and bat mitzvahs I went to had much better instrumentation for Hava Nagila than Jim Johnston. This is basically like a presetting on a Casio keyboard instead of like an actual klezmer band and all that. So, but still, you know, if you're going to give Barry Horowitz music for the first time in the company and you're going to focus more on his Jewish heritage, which they did, then Hava Nagila is perfect, John.
You know, I wish I was smart and funny enough when I was 13 years old to request the Jim Johnston version of Hava Nagila for when I went up in the chair at my bar mitzvah and just explain the joke to all the other 13-year-olds who don't get it. What a day at work for Jim Johnston this must have been. You just come into the office, look up at the dry erase board, got to do Hava Nagila today? All right, no problem. I have so many feelings about, I mean, obviously you and I have many feelings about this song. We've had to listen to it at least through our entire adolescent lives. But boy, even as a kid watching Barry Horowitz come out to Hava Nagila as a jobber with the Star of David on the screen, I was like, is this allowed? Are we all on the level here? It's like shot. I love it. Now, I mean, whatever, wrestling is a terrible place. I love it, but boy, it's absolutely crazy. And the depths of jobberdom that Barry was in. So there's that class of jobbers at the time that I was naming earlier. Freddie Joe Floyd, rest in peace. T.L. Hopper, the Goon. They would beat Barry Horowitz. They would get picture-in-picture promos when they'd beat Barry Horowitz. And even when the win comes, it's over Skip, half of a tag team. Like, it's just remarkable. But, I mean, look, I'd be lying. This is why we wouldn't, if this didn't happen, we wouldn't be talking about him. So it worked, you know, I remember when he beat Skip, you know, I remember watching it get played back on TV later. This is all very memorable, but you know, and I said this to you off air, as a kid, I have, you know, I'm shown wrestling by older cousins. And it's like a tongue-in-cheek thing for us my whole childhood to to like, you know, talk about whenever like a Jewish guy would lose. And, you know, whenever Raven would lose, we'd be like, oh, why do you think they had, why do you think they had him lose today? And, you know, we're joking, sort of. Little truth in every joke. No, I'm kidding. So, you know, because of that, and because of having older cousins who were, you know, like funny and on top of stuff like this, I've, you know, the Barry Horowitz thing has burned into me pretty good. But like I said, you know, memorable is memorable. This working is why he keeps working for so many years after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked a lot on this show about how, you know, American companies will give a Mexican wrestler like the stereotypical Latin sounding music, or the Japanese wrestler the traditional East Asian music. Well, this is the Jewish version of that. But the thing is, though, they picked the right song. They picked the right Jewish song here, because Hava Nagila is Hebrew for "Let us rejoice." And I will read the lyrics here for you, John. I'll bust out my Hebrew for once in my life. So
that's brave.
Hava Nagila, Hava Nagila, Hava Nagila, Venis Mecha. Let us rejoice, let us rejoice, let us rejoice and be glad. Hava Niranana, Hava Niranana, Hava Niranana, Venis Mecha. Let us sing, let us sing, let us sing and be glad. Uru, Uru, Uru Achim, Uru Achim Belev Sameach. Awaken, awaken, brethren, with a cheerful heart. So it's a celebration song. And when does Barry get this song? After he beats Skip, he is celebrating his first win in forever. So they didn't just pick like a random Jewish song. They picked a song that is perfect for the story, John.
You know, Andrew, I get what you're going for here. And I think it all lines up. But I cannot imagine Vince McMahon putting that kind of thought into this.
Oh, listen, this is all my own
Vince
conjecture.
Vince McMahon was
here.
Just like, what's the Jewiest thing I can get, right?
This is all my own reading into this thing. I guarantee you Vince was not like, yeah, that's the idea here. No, Vince was like, yeah, goddamn pal, I heard one of these Jewish songs at a wedding once, I think. Just go with that one, I guess. That's my feeling anyway. So
yeah, I think that's probably generous for how Vince said it.
But no, but you're right. I mean, it's very appropriate, even though I just imagine Vince McMahon said play something Jewy. But you know, I mean, as celebration songs go, it's no Me So Horny, but it's a good one. You know, I haven't really revisited this stuff in that much detail. I didn't realize he didn't start coming out to Hava Nagila until after he beat Skip. I thought that had just been his thing.
No, as far as I know, he didn't get any music in the WWF at all until he beat Skip that time. That's this first theme there. So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's cool. That's kind of cool. Because, I mean, yeah, I guess they probably weren't, like, showing his entrances or something, because they were establishing that he was losing, and he'd lost. He'd been losing matches to Skip in the lead-up, I thought. Well, whatever. That's cool. That's a cool, you know, gets his big win. Hava Nagila plays. Saving it for that moment's even cooler.
Well, they didn't play it after that. It was for the SummerSlam match against Skip. That's when it debuted, I believe. So
Right. That's what I mean. But it playing when he finally gets that roll-up, you know, feels like going up in the chair, baby. Feels like breaking glass.
No. When he beat Skip for the first time, there was no music. They debuted Hava Nagila at SummerSlam for the rematch against Skip.
Oh, that's what I meant. Well, you know, never mind. Never mind. This song sucks. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I don't know. But he kept it for the rest of the time he was there, right? Because he becomes like a character. That, all right. Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, it worked. You know what? You know, on the flip side of this, though, I was trying to think of like other times a wrestler's religion fell into their character to see if it ever mirrored the way it worked for Barry Horowitz. And the first thing I thought of was like Mystico, who, you know, Christianity or Catholicism is his whole gimmick, and then he becomes the most popular wrestler in the country and is the Observer Wrestler of the Year. So yeah, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, with Hava Nagila in particular, you know, it has a good tempo. It's zippy. It's upbeat. It's not like, you know, Shema Yisrael Adonai.
But you know, the crowd singing along well with... would be huge.
That'd be a sight to see. That'd be a sight to see for sure. But yeah, it works very well for like the pace of a wrestling entrance, I think. And really, you know, this is pretty much as far as they went with, you know, leaning into the Jewishness with Barry. He didn't start wearing like, you know, a yarmulke or a tallis. He didn't refuse to wrestle on Shabbat. Like, they kept it to Hava Nagila and the Star of David pretty much. And instead, they made him dress more like a nerd with glasses and the button-up shirt and pocket protector. And it's like, yeah, there are Jewish nerds out there. I mean, you know, look at us, for God's sake. But, but you know, this is Vince McMahon and the WWF. They could have made it way Jewier than this, John. It could have been way more on the nose, I think.
All right. You know, I was about to object pretty loudly, but I think the way you summed it up is where we can agree. With Vince McMahon, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. Because, you know, you can say... they didn't lean any further into his Judaism and the character than this. But walking out to Hava Nagila with the Star of David on the screen is pretty much as far as you can lean into somebody's Judaism without getting into some kind of trouble, I think.
That's why I'm surprised. Like, again, it's Vince and the WWF, you know? I mean,
yeah, no, we dodged a bullet. As a people, we dodged a bullet that they stopped there.
It's the same company that did Saba Simba and the Mexicals on lawnmowers and a billion other things, for God's sake. Right. So,
I mean, later, yeah, Barry never... Horowitz tags with Hakushi, I think, right before he leaves. And it's just, though, you just put those two on camera together, and it's Vince McMahon at his finest. Just his understanding of other cultures right there on screen for you.
Yeah. You know what they could have done? I thought of this the other day. It's a great idea. Whenever Barry lost a match, they could have played the Mourner's Kaddish. You know, he gets beat 1-2-3, and all of a sudden you hear Yit Gadal V'Yit Kadash Shemed Abba Be'alma Divrach Yerute. It's gold, John. I'm telling you, it's a golden tremendous idea right there.
Oh, you should have had the pencil.
What could have been?
Age of two?
Yeah, I was 2 or 3 years old right then, yeah.
When the next Barry Horowitz comes around, I'm making sure you get the call.
Yeah. By the way, I hope all of the Jewish listeners out there are enjoying these references as much as I am, because I'm having a ball here, man. A matzah ball, if you will, folks.
Hey. Yeah. No. This is my favorite episode of. This is my favorite episode of Music of the Mat to date. No bias. This is for a very select audience. I mean, also, yes. For what it's worth, a little pulling back the curtain. When Andrew came into the Voices of Wrestling Slack to ask if anyone wanted to be on this episode, my response was, all right, I mean, if you're looking for a Jew to do it with, I'll do it. And Andrew was like, yep, that's it. It's yours.
So, well, listen, I can't.
Here we are,
I can't
folks.
Get the reactions on air to these references if a fellow member of the tribe isn't with me. So I have to get someone to bounce off of, for God's sake. So
no, trust me, Andrew. I felt like it was my duty to be here, and it's an honor to serve.
So Barry leaves the WWF in 97, and he hops over to WCW. He'll be there for a few years. His first theme there is when he had from November of 97 to May of 98. It's from the BRG Music Library. It's by Rick DeFonso, and it's called Screw in A Minor. So first of all, you have to be very careful how you say that title, because
I didn't even
screw in A minor and screw in A minor are two very different things. Oh boy, oh boy.
I was going to say, screw in A minor. Is this another Two Live Crew song?
Hey, folks.
Wow, that I never caught that. That's incredible.
Yes, but anyway, gang, we're back to the instrumental rock here, the production library song that is a staple of WCW. And I don't know, there's not really much to go on here. Tonally, kind of reminds me of the band Tesla in a way, but this is a real downgrade from Havana Gila, John, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, it's a bummer. And I think, as these, free use songs go or whatever, I think this one's, I appreciate this one for not giving me the aforementioned DVD menu's been on too long feeling. But it's not much better than that. I also appreciated that you provided me a list of other wrestlers they didn't give a shit about who got this theme. And I'll let you, I won't spoil that list if you were going to touch on it, but I couldn't believe Reggie White came out to this.
The football player. Yeah. He used it for his match against Mongo at Slambury 97. Yeah.
Against Mongo. All right. All right. Maybe they did put some respect on Rick DeFonso's screwing minor. I don't know. Like you said, there was a lot of themes like this looking back at WCW of the time, especially like on the Saturday Night Show. I feel like on the Saturday Night Show, you could have played this song for every entrance and have even noticed. It's just a big nothing burger. Got very little for this one.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised they didn't continue with Havana Gila at all. Because, on the one hand, they never really featured him as like a character like WWF did. He was back to being just a job guy on Worldwide and Saturday Night. But still, it's his most well-known song. And it's public domain. Anyone can use it, but they decided to just drop it all together for this song instead. So, yeah, it's weird. It reminds me of when I did the British Bulldog episode, how when he went back to WCW in 98 after the screw job, they didn't give him Rule Britannia right away. He had like a generic rock song at first. So, yeah, it's a bit strange to me, I guess. I don't know, John.
Well, yeah, and I think it's especially strange because of how not shy WCW was about capitalizing on work WWF did. What's the sense in not having him just walk out to Havana Gila? And no matter what you thought about Havana Gila as an entrance, it's memorable, and that's the real currency of wrestling themes, that you remember them. Sometimes when I think about how WCW treated music back then, and the Bulldog thing is another great example. Sometimes I'm like, did you guys notice that in the other company, like the theme songs were like a major property for all the things you were willing to take? I was a WCW kid. When I say take from the other company, like I was very slow to come back to WWF. I say this all with love. I was a Nitro kid. Like I didn't come back to WWF as like my main Monday night gig until like sometime after WrestleMania 14, some stretch after. And even then I was slow to leave WCW, but like these like generic rock themes, when you have access to Bulldog's theme, when you can just play Havana Gila, what's the sense in not? You're just leaving money on the, well, I don't know how much money you're leaving Hanukkah gelt on the table.
Yeah, I don't get it. But yeah, as far as other guys who used this song, you mentioned Reggie White, but also Barry Darso, John Nord, Michael Modest, and Robbie Rage. So real who's who of guys right there, John.
Yeah, I don't... Robbie Rage? What's that?
One half of the tag team High Voltage with Kenny Chaos, and I believe he used this for a singles match on Worldwide in 2000 once. So there you go.
Oh. There are some names in here that I was going to do the NBA on TNT.
Who we play for, yeah.
Yeah.
So the final theme of the episode here is Barry's last WCW theme. He had this from May of 98 until he left in March 2000. This is by Bill Lisagang from the Atmosphere Music Library. It's called Hold Your Fire. So this is basically more of the same as Screw in A minor in terms of genre. It's much faster paced, though, a lot more frenetic, I think closer to cinema in that regard, but still, it just doesn't feel like the right fit for Barry Horowitz post-Hava Nagila. Just, it's not the same, and unlike Jump or Pop That Pussy, it doesn't have the fun factor either, so yeah, we're kind of ending on like a generic down note here, John, but you know, what can you do, I guess, what can you do?
Yeah, same deal as the last song, though I do think this is more of the, like, the Capcom guitar music that makes me feel like nothing's happening than Screw in A minor was. But yeah, same deal. I think maybe these generic nothing themes were suitable for... There is a Barry Horowitz heel turn that's incredible to see footage of. Toward the end of his WCW run, where he's bad Barry Horowitz. And I don't know if anything happened that gave him the nickname. Maybe just one day they said, "You're bad now." And his entrance would be, he would wear a vest that had the handprint on the back for this too, for the pat in the back. But for his entrance, he would fake the back pat as if the crowd was dying for him to do it. And not do it. And I think it's one of the most like incredible things to watch. It's him just being like, "Yeah, I bet you want the back pat. I'm not going to do it for you." And everyone being like, "Who the fuck is this guy?" But yeah, no. The other funny thing about Horowitz's WCW run is they do another long losing. They talk about how he never wins. Except the difference is they never pay it off. He just goes away one day.
Yeah, bad Barry Horowitz makes me think, like, you know, what in the world would a heel remix of Hava Nagila sound like?
Yo.
That would have been amazing. Like, just crazy big guitars in there, you know.
And Vinnie Moore out one more time. Just tearing up Hava Nagila.
Yeah, big shredding guitar solo in there. That would have been great, yeah. But yeah, this song was also used by other guys. Horace Hogan, Chad Fortune, and Lenny Lane. So, yeah, all the stars are here. Beardy Man, Claude Racine.
Yeah, all the big names lining up for their turn to use Hold Your Fire by Bill Lisagang. You think Horace Hogan had a call on his uncle to rip that song away from Barry Horowitz because he wanted it so bad? That's my headcanon for that one.
maybe so. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening.
And Andrew, there's one thing I wanted to pose to you to add to the history book of wrestling that I caught here about Barry Horowitz. If you'll humor me for a minute here, as we know, when they promote, you know, everything that happens in house shows is not canon to the WWF, right? So they'll just say whatever happened on TV, they'll mold the story for whatever they need it to be, regardless of what happened in reality. So I was trying to figure out what was Barry Horowitz's actual first win in the WWF. So I went to his cage match and I looked through his first year in the company, which was 1987, and he loses every match except one. His first win in the WWF came on December 27th, 1987, against Jerry Allen And I wondered, he'd been losing to Jerry Allen. Why would he win that match? So I looked up when Hanukkah landed that year. Now, I was disappointed at first because Hanukkah ran from the 15th to the 23rd and the match was on the 27th. But then I looked at what his prior match was. He hadn't wrestled a match between December 9th and December 27th. So his first match after Hanukkah of 1987 was his actual first win in the company over Jerry Allen. So for all the shit we give Vince McMahon, if you want a little, well, I don't think we have any reason to give Vince, I guess I'm not really in the business of trying to credit Vince McMahon for anything. But if you want a fun story to tell, pretend that what I'm saying is true and not a thing I just made up. That Vince McMahon gave Barry Horowitz his first win for Hanukkah, a belated Hanukkah gift, on December 27th of 1987.
Here's where I ruin it for you.
Oh, no!
According to Cage Match, Barry Horowitz's first win in the WWF, as Barry Horowitz, not Barry Hart, which he did win some matches there earlier in the decade, but as Barry Horowitz, his first win was not in December, it was July 22nd, 87. Barry Horowitz defeats Brady Boone in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. So.
Well, then I'm going back to Vince McMahon being an anti-Semite.
You know what? That works a little bit better, I think.
I think so.
In the grand scheme of things.
Oops.
Yeah. Oops. Oops. And now that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And John, thank you so much for being here. This was so much fun. One of my favorite episodes of all time, really. And more importantly, it was kosher. So you know what? A good pat on the back all around, John. How about that?
I'm going to do it into the microphone. Is it picking up? I'm patting.
We got it. We got it. Yeah.
All right. Good, good, good. Yeah, this was a total joy. I couldn't have asked for a better episode to come back on Music of the Mat for.
Consider it an early Hanukkah gift. There you go. My treat to you, my friend.
Truly, yeah. I'm in the spirit.
Yeah. Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. I as Andrew said earlier, I am a sporadic these days contributor to voicesofwrestling.com. I actually was planning on working on some stuff for the site today. I play in a band called Timeshares. I know that's a tough name to find a band called that on the internet, but bear with me. We put out an album this year called Limb. So if you like, I don't know, loud guitar and stuff, check out Timeshares, the band I'm in. You can find that on all the streamers or whatever. And you can follow me on Twitter at Old John Hernandez.
And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. You can find all the great shows on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. voicesofwrestling.com/discord for discussions and comments. voicesofwrestling.com/donate for any donations. Just click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. John, thank you again. I'll see you around.
Thanks. See you.
All right. For John Hernandez, I'm Andrew Rich. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas, joyous Kwanzaa, a Festivus to the rest of us, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.